On this episode, we discuss Collateral Beauty.
So if this was a X-rated movie, it would have been called Collateral Booty, right?
And if kids made it, it'd be called Collateral Duty.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart the Hustlin' Hoosier Wellington.
Okay.
And kind of thrown off by the not perfect timing of Stuart's beer opening there, but still admiring that new nickname you gave yourself. I'm Elliot. Comments on everything, Kalen. Nice sip of a beer, Dan, while I was talking. And Stuart, great pins on your jacket. We're here in Dan's apartment, cleaner than usual, a lot less cat debris on the floor than I'm used to. And what are those in the corner? A pair of shoes. Can't wait to hear what kind of adventures Dan's been having walking around in those in the big city. New York, Gotham, the Big Apple, Batman's home, Superman's dome, Spider-Man's place, the country's face, the financial center of the world, theater capital of America.
This is great. I can get the nap that I really wanted during the movie in right now.
So, guys, what do you think of that nickname I put out there? I think I'm going to take it for a walk.
No, I like it. I like it. What I like about it is, one, it tells us a little bit your backstory,
yeah,
and that you were a male hustler. And mm-hmm. two, it tells us the name of your favorite movie, Hoosiers.
Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, something, a little-known fact about Stuart is that he's like a corn-fed Midwestern boy. Mm-hmm. Give me that yummy corn. Yum, yum, yum.
Feed me more of it. Now, here's
on the cob, in a big bowl with butter.
Maybe on pizza
if you're in Europe. Who cares?
Here's the thing, though. Can you say that someone is corn-fed anymore when corn is by far the largest crop in the United States? It's subsidized at such a rate that it's actually would be more expensive not to grow it.
Yeah,
and yeah. So I mean, I can say whatever I want. Judge Dredd's not going to kick down the door and send me off to the fucking solitary cells, the isolation cubes. Which one is it?
Dan? Arkham Asylum.
They just freeze you up and put you in a...
That's yep. Demolition Man.
All right. Sorry.
What if Demolition Man...
Okay,
Judge
I'm with
Dredd
you.
From the Sylvester Stallone movie Judge Dredd, and they had to fight Dredd from the movie Dredd.
Okay, I mean, is that the pitch for a movie or a comic book?
It's called Too Many Dudes.
Or like a Tumblr story?
Yeah, Tumblr story.
And then they all have sex with each other.
A Tumblr story.
I feel like Too Many Dudes, like, that's pretty ambiguous of a title. I think you're underselling your property.
Okay, well, I wanted to call it Too Many Dreads, but I thought people might think it was about a Jamaican
Dreadlocks?
Hair. Yeah, Jamaican
yeah.
hair.
Yeah, place. They're like, where's Dred Scott?
Where's huge movie star Dred Scott of the Supreme Court decision of the same name? Because you know he spun that into a movie career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. He was in Club Dredd, the movie.
And Judge Dredd Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, what do we do on this podcast aside from offend people?
This is a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it. And tonight we watched a movie called Collateral Beauty, which is a thing that was explained several times in the movie, and I still don't know what it's supposed to be.
Here's my thinking on it. Collateral beauty is the beauty around other stuff.
Okay. Wow, like all those years of improv really showing off, Elliot.
Or like it's the beauty that's cast into sharp relief. You finally see it when something bad happens. You become more present and more aware of the beauty in the world because you're raw.
Is that?
I feel like that's what they want you to think it is, but
they're really pulling
so
wool over my
poorly
eyes.
Explained in the movie that.
Well, let's talk about what the movie's about, Dan. Who are the right. stars of this movie? Because there's big name stars.
There's big stars like William Smith.
Yep, Will I Am Smith.
There's Edward Norton.
Yeah, weird way to pronounce it.
Oh, wow,
right?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, there's keep going.
Kate Winslet.
Okay, this bit continues to roll. Let's give us some more names.
And Michael Pena, who I will say correctly, lest I seem racist.
I mean, there's kind of more racist.
Saying that,
I feel like, yeah.
Yeah, you're. And Naomi Harris, another Academy Award nominee.
Helen Mirren is in it.
Helen Mirren.
Keira Knightley.
Kira Knightley.
The old KK.
So I guess what people call her. So,
hey, this KK.
This movie
great work, Ben and like Beckham, KK. Hey, KK. You going to make any more Caribbean movies, KK?
This guy keeps interrupting
me. Hey, KK. What you atoning for? Atonement. KK. What else was Keira?
Why do you keep walking away, KK?
Hey, KK. Hey. Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought you were Keira Knightley.
You're doing a great job as the face of Chanel.
Balfour work, KK. And King Kong is like,
me?
No, not you.
Oh. Same initials. Kong, for a moment, Kong thought that he was the face of Chanel.
Finally. Oh.
Kong, beautiful.
My beautiful punim. He's Jewish. A lot of people don't know that about King Kong.
I mean, that explains a lot of the story, though.
Yeah, he is just like Larry King and Alan King.
Mm-hmm. So this is a movie about a very sad Willie Smith, Big Willie style Smith.
Dan, I want you to do the summary this time because I love the way you're going and I want more of it. Look, wherever this crazy taxi takes me, I want to get out and I'll pay $100 extra in tip.
He's so sad that his kid died that he plays with dominoes all day.
Tell me more. Where does he work?
He works at an advertising agency.
How long into the movie did it take us to figure out that's where he worked? 30 minutes,
maybe, at least.
Now, who does he share this ad agency ownership with?
Edward Norton.
Uh-huh.
And
of TV's The Honeymooners.
Kate Winslet and Michael Peña.
Of TV's Titanic and Michael Peña of the movie's Chips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so...
And now they're worried about him, right? Because he's so greedy boy.
Yeah, he's not able to do basic things in his life. I mean, he comes into work every day, but as he does it, he has to play the set up the aforementioned fancy dominoes things to knock down, and he can't seem to work up the energy to even pay for his rent at which Kate Winslet discovers when she comes to visit him.
Now, we know that he was not always this way because we see in the first scene, he's like a charismatic boss, giving like a funny, motivating speech. And Dan, what does he emphasize and highlight as the three things that drive all human action? He says,
first you get the money.
He goes, then you get the power. And then, of course,
you get the women.
The women.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe.
And they're like, you plagiarized that dude, but you're such a great boss. We'll roll with it.
And he's like, and that's right. Highest sales get a DVD copy of The Women, the remake, starring who is in that?
Oh, I fucking don't know. I'd say KK was in it.
Yeah, KK. Hey, were you in this? KK. Hey, sign this. Sign this DVD. Anyway, he gives a speech in which he identifies the three. He says, what's your why? And he identifies the three motivators of human action, and they are, Stuart?
Time.
Mm-hmm.
Love.
Mm-hmm.
And death.
Kind of a twist ending there. Mm-hmm. Spooky. And so now he is mad at time, love, and death. And his friends / business partners, Michael Peña, Edward Norton, and Kate Winslet,
The three Mouseketeers, let's call them.
Sure, no reason to.
They decide... So they discover...
They've already hired a private eye to follow him.
Yeah. And they want to...
This is some kind of Paul Auster novel.
Is all set in New York. The character actor who plays the private eye is like... She's always a nanny in things, right? She seems like...
You're confusing her with Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah. Maybe... Was she Mrs. Doubtfire in that movie?
You know why
she played Mrs. Doubtfire's mom.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Okay, where
we call me Elvira. Elvira Doubtfire. You know why they call it, how she got that name?
No.
Because her house was on fire.
Okay.
And she refused to believe it and died and came back as a sort of nanny spirit.
Oh, so it's like an old English, like you get named after your profession.
Exactly.
You're the person who doubts fires are happening. That person was supported in the village economy, who knows?
She was one of those holy fools who was taken care of by charitable works. As it's also known, the GOP health plan. Oh!
Oh, wow.
Topical. Dan, so they hire this private eye, and what does she discover?
Well, the reason they hire
this
private eye...
She's watching him.
There's a chance for them to sell the company and all make... mucho Dolores.
Mm-hmm.
And so
lots of Dolores.
You also get the feeling like the company is failing without, you know, a firm hand at the at the tiller.
Apparently, yeah. It takes the three of them to equal one pinky finger of Will Smith. Mm-hmm. He's the Don Draper of this movie in that he is, one, an advertising genius, mm-hmm. two, ruining his business partner's business, and three, very depressed and unwilling
and
to
driven by his yeah. whims, basically.
Yeah, his whims and his loss mm-hmm. in yeah. equal measure.
And Will Smith owns the controlling interest in the company, so they need to prove that he is mentally unstable to wrest control of the company from him.
And sell it so that it can stay in business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And which is not such a terrible motivation for them, but they come up with the most evil plan to put into effect afterwards.
Now, this plan comes about. Edward Norton, he takes a shine to an actress who is lined up to audition for a commercial by the aforementioned KK! Mm-hmm. KK! She doesn't want to come over.
No.
No.
She's too busy.
She's pretending that she can't hear you. She's
starting
reading
KK's delivery service.
Oh, no. No. I refuse.
I forgot your anti-Studio Ghibli joke rule on the show.
Oh, brother. I'm sorry that I'm a little slow tonight, guys.
No,
it's okay, Dan.
I'm very tired.
The thing is, Dan, you and I, we got a little bit twisted last night at the yeah. Max Fun Drive meetup.
It's true.
And I, at one point in the night, when Dan's waiting for his Uber, I said, "Hey, Dan, I'll see you tomorrow because we're recording." And Dan looks at me and he goes, "What?"
And his eyes bugged out like Large Marge.
Yeah. An accurate depiction of what happened.
Now, Dan, does this mean you're revoking your anti-Studio Ghibli joke rule because you're so slow and I can still finally do my neighbor Toblerone one act?
It's a whole one act?
I've expanded it.
All right. Oh, wow.
If you would let me release these jokes one at a time over 100 episodes, it'd be different. But now I have a 40-minute one act play.
All right. Now I'm trying to think of other Studio Ghibli things, but I actually don't like Studio Ghibli that much. So I can't think of other titles.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay. I know.
All your hate mail to us, everybody in the world.
I guess you hate beauty and elegance. Is it about World War II, Dan?
He doesn't
let it go. That was a long time ago.
Dan doesn't like the concept of flight.
I can't justify my dislike. I just know what I feel.
And there goes my other one act, Princess Mononokia. It's the whole thing.
Go.
If it was about cell phones. So he bumps into this actress, Keira Knightley, and she impresses him with, one, her attractiveness, and mm-hmm. two, an idea she has for an ad and making their ad slogan better. But then,
which male advertising executives love to hear
they
from
love
women
it when younger women tell them how to improve their work. They're very open to ideas from women and very open to ideas from other people. Mm-hmm. But she then flees and he follows her mm-hmm. to a little theater where she's rehearsing a play that, frankly, seems kind of pretentious with two other actors, yeah, Helen Mirren and another actor whose name I don't remember.
It seems like this is supposed to be an original piece, this play that they're producing, but it's all written in sort of Shakespearean dialect. So I'm kind of confused by why this modern play is sounds the way
possible.
It is.
It's an existing play and we just didn't recognize it.
Or maybe it's written that way as like a goof dude.
Yeah, goof dude.
It's Stewart's new character that he plays after the Hustle and Hoosier.
Yeah, goof dude. He's like a cool version of Goofy. Put him on fucking t-shirts and give me $1 million.
The Looney Tunes had their time in the sun wearing totally cool, like rap clothes on shirts. Time yep. for Goofy's slot.
Put some wraparound shades on Goofy. I don't know. Give him a cigarette to smoke because he doesn't give a shit. So, goof dude.
So he finds these three actors and they come up with a plan.
So he walks in and he sees them rehearsing for like a second and he's like, "Oh my God, that was amazing. And I have seen a lot of theater."
And he does say that. Now, here's some things that we didn't mention. One, what the private eye did discover about William Smith is that he has been writing letters to Love, Time, and Death and just mailing them, which is, one, a waste of a stamp. That's $1.50 in postage he just wasted because he doesn't even write an address. He just writes Love, Time, or Death, stamps it, puts it in a mailbox, doesn't put his return address mm-hmm. on it. So some mailman has been wandering the eternal abstract cosmos with a platonic realm trying to find these concepts. Yep. And he's like, "I guess I'll ask the endless. Yeah, if they can show me where to
trapped.
I mean, yeah. I'll find death there. And I guess destiny could be controlling time, and I don't know about love. Delirium, maybe?
And then they bring in bags of mail to the courtroom, and they go, thousands of letters, all for death.
And this chattering skeleton who has been telling people he's death at a department store, you're free to go, Grimmy.
Yeah, so he's been writing letters to... entities.
It's called Tragedy on 34th Street. He's been writing letters to these entities, and we learn that each of these people also has a thing going on with them. Ed Norton, he's having trouble connecting with his daughter.
His daughter is still mad at him for cheating on her mom and causing a divorce, and she's like, keeps bringing it up. She's like, yeah, can I smell your dick?
I haven't heard that song in a long time.
That's an actual song?
Mm-hmm. You never heard that song before?
Yeah, by Risqué.
I think that was before your time, that it was a Daily Show Office favorite, and we would listen to it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. Why are you coming home? 5 in the morning. Something's going on. Can I smell your dick? And it's because,
I mean, you added a syllable to yo, but that's okay. You're pretty close.
Look, I'm trying to.
You're trying to make sure that Dan understands enunciating more than the original song.
Look, I know there's a cultural barrier here between Dan and all of culture. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, that was when we used to listen to a lot.
So she's suspicious.
Let me explain the song to you. She's okay. Suspicious that her husband is cheating on her. Mm-hmm. And the only way
she's been hearing stories.
Yeah, the only way to figure this out is the aforementioned dick smelling.
Now, does sex smell, Elliot? I've never had any, so.
Well, according to the song Sex and Candy, it smells, and even the scent of candy can't cover it up.
No, no.
Mm-hmm. Now, what does candy smell like? And I don't mean John Candy. I can pretty much guess what he smells like now, which is a decomposing horse.
Yum.
But what does regular candy sound like?
Sound like?
Yeah, what does it sound
like?
Like
this.
Crinkle. What does it smell like?
Well, what kind of candy are we talking here? Are we talking a hard candy? A soft candy? I don't know what a soft candy is.
I guess like a fruit roll-up?
Like a marshmallow?
Is that Elliot, candy? Elliot, I don't think, is actually expecting an answer. He's just trying to hold up a mirror towards society.
These are all Zen Cohens.
Oh,
I get it. One, I don't expect an answer.
It's a way to
they're Jewish.
Zen clear my
Cohen.
Head.
Zen Cohen is the son of Jewish hippies. Actually, that reminds me of I've been trying to think if this is racist for me to do a Twitter joke about this. There's an ad in the
summer. All right, by all means.
Might as well work it out here.
This workshop in here in front of thousands of people. There's an ad in the New York subways right now. There are ads for the Second Avenue subway line, which just opened up. Why the subway feels the need to advertise another part of the subway is confusing to me.
Yeah, it's like drinking a can of Coke, and at the bottom of that can of Coke, there's a, like, why not drink Coke sticker, and you're like, why don't I drink Coke?
Well, it's like there was this somebody who had I think it was Mark Maron years ago who had a joke about why the post office advertises. Like, there's no other competitors. If you just tape pennies to an envelope, they're not going to get there. You have to go to the post office to buy stamps. This was, of course, before stamps.com. This was years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, but it's weird to me. But there's an ad that shows it's all these different people whose businesses and things are now easier to get to because of the Second Avenue subway line. Mm-hmm. And for those outside of New York, this is a subway line that's been
like
talked about
like a bunch
for
of fucking grandmas?
Many decades.
Like, who is
well,
it?
Kind of, yeah. And there's
like Sloan Kettering?
And one of the ads is a Zen master from a Zen Buddhist temple. And the quote is something like, the opening of the subway really ends a lot of anxieties we had about the opening of the subway. And it's like, dude, if you're really anxious about when the subway's going to open, maybe you're not the Zen master I should be going to. You need to, physician, heal thyself, buddy.
Whoa, you took him down a couple notches.
Is that the racist thing?
Yeah, I don't know if that's culturally insensitive or not.
I don't think so. Do you, Stuart, you're a Zen master.
Yeah, man. What are we talking about?
Anyway, let's go back to the movie, shall we? Collateral Beauty. So he's been writing letters to love, death, and time, and each of his partners have an issue that's related to the same. Ed Norton is having trouble re-winning back the love of his daughter.
Yep.
Kate Winslet is worried she's too old to have a baby. She's running out of time. And Michael Pena has cancer that he hasn't told anyone else about. He's dying.
About 20 minutes into the movie, he lets out a cough, and we're like, that dude's dying.
Mm-hmm.
It's like any time a woman gets sick in a movie or TV show, and you're like, I guess she's pregnant. What's she going to do with that baby?
Well, I mean, they all had like the most obvious scenes setting up what their wants and desires were. Like, they might as well have had signs on them during these scenes being like, this is my goal. This is my screenwriter's goal. Where, like, the first one where Ed Norton is talking to his daughter outside the downstairs.
He's in a lobby inside.
Yeah, sorry.
I believe probably in the screenplay it's an interior high-rise lobby day.
And she doesn't want to come with him over Christmas, and they have a big conversation about that, very clear what he wants. Then we have a scene out of nowhere where Kate Winslet is looking at artificial insemination on the
on her computer in an office in the middle of the floor that has glass walls. Everyone in the office knows that she wants it, that she needs a baby in her tummy.
Yeah, she needs a baby in her tummy. It's like that. It's like guys that'll go to the library and look at porn, and you're like, really?
I'd say they're not exactly the same situation. One of them is a little bit more acceptable.
Pictures of babies are porn to some people.
Yeah, horrible people, like monsters.
Yeah, you're right. That was that was insensitive.
And then there's the aforementioned obvious cough, which, as Stuart said, is just secondary to like someone throwing up in a movie indicating that they're pregnant. As like the most obvious signifier in a film.
It reminds me of the one of the most horrifying things I've ever seen in a movie in what about 10 minutes into Synecdoche, New York, when Philip Seymour Hoffman is peeing into a sink or something and he pees out blood and you're like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen.
Hope you don't ever pee out blood.
What a horror movie.
As somebody who's had blood come out in their pee. It's not,
what,
it's,
were you passing stones?
I was passing stone. Oh, okay. Yeah. It was this the second
you
time
weren't,
I passed a
stone. You weren't like attacked
he was
by a werewolf.
Passing a DVD
like
of
no,
the family stone.
No. A werewolf got into my penis and was just ripping it up.
Like in inner space?
Yeah. So I don't know why the government shrunk a werewolf, put him in a capsule, and then injected him into my body. It
you
didn't
know,
help
sometimes
me.
Sometimes you do
sure.
it just to see what happens.
You know, it was like one of them experiments the CIA pulls where they're just pouring radiation into a town's water supply to
I
see
mean,
what happens.
I mean, there's two types of science, Elliot. There's science with a goal, and there's science just to explore the universe.
I thought you were going to say there's normal science and there's weird science.
There's normal
and
science.
This is very much of the weird variety.
That's true.
Yeah, it was performed by guys with bras on their heads.
Okay. Now, did they ever get
I feel
to-
like if we were going to do a remake of Weird that'd be crazy, of Inner Space, you could...
I'm less excited.
You would certainly be the lead in the Martin Short role. I'm, of course, you know, what's his name?
Dennis Quaid.
Dennis Quaid. Picardo. I'd be great. You could be Robert Picardo, Dan.
Now, and you raise a good point. If we did do a remake of Weird Science, you better believe we're not doing the sequence where they go to that blues bar.
Yeah.
And that's
they all
not
smoke
happening.
Pot and they're, yeah, he talks in jive language.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Do you think Wyatt and what was the other guy's name?
Andrew, was that it?
No.
Andrew Wyeth,
famous painter. Do you ever think that those two guys got to write up their experiment for the Journal of Weird Science? Because they got to peer review that stuff. Someone has to replicate those results, or else it can't be considered actual.
Yeah, that's fair.
Actual, factual. Now, okay, let's get back to the movie. So everyone has their deal. They decide they're going to hire these three actors to portray love, death, and time. And kind of ambush Will Smith so that they can – at first it seems like they're doing it for therapeutic reasons. But then it's so that they can just make him look crazy.
Yeah.
The ultimate plan is to provoke him to such an extent that he yells at them. And then they'll have video of it secretly taped and they'll digitally remove the actors. So it looks like Will Smith's just losing it in the streets at nobody.
Now let's just
losing it.
Reiterate this. Because
as in the film losing it.
Because this is the dumbest thing in the world, let's just reiterate it. So make it clear, make sure the audience gets it. They're hiring three actors, again, to pretend that they're death, time, and love.
To gaslight
Will Smith.
Yeah.
And they go to a huge amount of unnecessary effort to explain what gaslighting – oh, no, they don't even explain what gaslighting is. Helen Mirren uses the term gaslight, and the other characters don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that term has become such a common term, even in political discussions, that like they would just – you know those guys all read liberal blogs all day. They live in New York. They're rich, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I reach for the arts and leisure section first.
Of the blogs?
I look for the funnies.
I want to see. Yeah, I want to see what Slylock Fox is up to.
And I go straight to the obituaries.
What's for dinner tonight?
Wait, am I a ghoul?
Yep.
So they do this, and their actors go and confront Will Smith and say very pseudo profound things. But they also help each of the other people. D- deal with their personal problems in stupid suit.
Yeah, they're all matched up perfectly.
Meanwhile, each one of the people is coaching or is the liaison, I guess, for the actor that is portraying the thing that is their problem.
Uh-huh.
And I almost wish there was a scene where they divided it up deliberately that way because it's so on the nose that Kate Winslet was like, okay, well, I feel like I'm running out of time, so I'll take time. And Michael Pena, you're dying even though you haven't told us about it, so you take mm-hmm. death. And clearly you have issues with your daughter, Ed Norton's. And they all call each other by their actor, by their real names, too.
Not their character really names.
We got to convince everyone that Will Smith is crazy.
I mean, acting is about strong choices, so I think that that's a really bold choice.
to ignore the character names?
Exactly.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Will Smith seems to be finding a much healthier outlet for his grief, which is a support group for parents who have lost children. He's mm-hmm. been grieving over the loss of his daughter, and these other people are – and there's a great scene where – I mean, not great, but a kind of weird scene where this woman gives a long monologue about the death of her son.
Mm-hmm.
And when she realized that her young son knew he was not going to survive. And then when she finishes and she's crying, Will Smith walks in and the woman running the support group immediately turns to Will Smith and starts asking him to introduce himself and talk to him. And he doesn't want to talk and he sits down. And then she turns to the woman who's been crying and is like, well, thank you for sharing that with us. And it's like, how insensitive was that?
Yeah.
And what a sign of the double standard of society. This woman is clearly in pain.
Yeah, it's this like super intense scene of like the camera like hugging this woman's face as she's crying and telling a terrible story. And then it's immediately undercut by like, oh, forget about you. You're a nobody. Like, Will Smith is a somebody.
The star of Hitch just walked in. Hello. The millennium has begun. Mm-hmm. Sorry for your loss, lady. The exit's over there. Let's talk about Men in Black 3.
Yeah, one of the Galaxy Defenders came in. Come on. he won't let you remember your dead son.
No, sit down and tell us all about how your life got flipped, turned upside down. If you could take a minute, just sit right there. Tell us all about the death of your young daughter. he starts to build a relationship with the woman who runs the support group. They seem to
played
be having,
by Academy Award nominee Naomi Harris,
who is much better in the movie she was nominated for an Academy Award for, but. She's given a lot more to do there.
She's a lot more crack to be addicted to.
We don't know how much crack she could be addicted to in this
That's
movie.
True. She could That's be a very true. Functional crack addict, like in Half Nelson.
I mean, he's not that functional.
He can do his day job.
And I mean, he's pretty good looking.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's her that gives Will Smith the idea of collateral beauty. And it is one of many speeches in the movie that sounds like it means a lot. And I'm sure it meant a lot to whoever was writing them. But to you, the audience, it's like, these are just gossamer threads of smoke. And every time I try to grasp onto them and understand what they're meaning, it just it slips through my fingers. I can't figure it out. It's like a rope made out of sand.
And when you say the audience, you mean like the movie critics who were forced to see the movie and nobody else because nobody went to see this movie.
According to Wikipedia, this movie outdid its budget.
Really?
Quite a bit. Had a budget in the 30s of millions and made 80s of millions worldwide.
Really?
Yeah.
People love that Ed Norton.
Yeah, he's probably the biggest star in the movie. He's the big draw is Ed Norton. People are like, he never really reached the full potential that he showed in Primal Fear, but I guess I'll keep watching his movies.
Mm-hmm. The movie continues for a while, and then
that much happens except everyone has their epiphanies about their lives, and
they confront him with the
doctored videos,
and he signs away stuff, and then at the same time, he drops a little bit of info about each of his three partners' various problems.
And he shows them maybe he's so not mentally incompetent that he's identified their problems and tells them what they need to do. But again, he does it in a way that isn't really that concretely helpful for them. They pay the actors.
And in case you're wondering, this is the point in the movie where I was dozing off and jerking my head back up to say, as if to say, shit, I have a podcast that I do. I should really be paying attention to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was checking my phone. So
but we're getting to the two big twists of the movie.
Uh-huh.
KK, you want to tell them what the twists are?
She keeps walking.
She's not paying
Apparently
attention.
KK also stands for catcall.
if it was super cool.
Yeah.
But it's not. Catcalling's not cool. Unless you are literally calling for a lost cat. And you go, meow, buttons, meow. Buttons, come here, boy. Buttons.
I'm glad that you're saying in both languages.
We know. Maybe the baby Buttons only knows a little bit of English, but everyone speaks cat. Because everybody wants to be a cat. The Aristocats. Anyway, so they... I'm just trying to shake Dan out of his torpor.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So here are the two twists. Twist, everyone's happy again, kind of. They've come to peace with things. Michael Peña tells his wife he's dying. She knew already. Everybody did.
Yeah, he was fucking Ralphing all the time.
Yeah. It's, yeah. But first twist. Will Smith goes to the home of the head of the support group. Turns out, because she lost a daughter too.
He ruins her Christmas Eve by coming to her apartment. And we're like, wow, she's got a really nice place.
She's got a great house.
And it's the sort of thing like... I've been thinking about people's apartments and homes on TV and movies a lot lately. I was watching Big Little Lies, the HBO show, which has a bunch of very nice Monterey homes. And then you finally see the one poor character's house. And I was like, wow, that's a nice place. That's a stern rebuke to the quality of housing in Brooklyn, I guess.
In real life.
Yeah.
But he goes to her house and she tells him about she lost her daughter to a rare brain cancer.
Uh-huh.
And then she starts playing, like, I forget, does he play the video or does she play the video? He has video
of him. The video is on, I think.
Oh, in her house, him and a little girl. Mm-hmm. And she says, tell me about your daughter. His daughter had the same name and died of the same thing. You're thinking, this is the most amazing coincidence. This is bad screenwriting, that their lives are so similar. But it turns out it was his wife all along. They'd become estranged after the death of their daughter, and he had been haunting this support group because he didn't know how to communicate with her anymore.
And the only way they could do it was to pretend that they were strangers.
Much as many married couples do. They'll go to a motel or they go to a hotel bar
and
pretend to be different people. And
they're like, excuse me.
Their kids are dead.
Do you like pina coladas and having a dead child?
It really spices up the marriage if you pretend you're in an extreme stage of grief.
Oh, man.
And you're strangers.
Yeah.
That they have just pretended to be strangers and they come back together and they're crying. And I have to assume then that the sex they had that night was amazing. Because they're both
they're edging for years.
It's both the sex of strangers who have found that they have a lot in common and they're kind of they never felt this way before, and the sex of a couple that knows each other's bodies extremely well and knows exactly what pleasure buttons to push. So I guess that's kind of the best sex you can have, right?
I don't like hearing about it.
I don't like your understanding of sex.
It bothers me. I don't like to think of you as a sexual being.
It's like seeing a Dr. Oz
I have a
clip.
Child.
I know.
You know I had sex at least once.
Yeah, but I don't look at your child and think, oh, they fucked to get that. That's
I do every day, and it's hot.
Oh, gross.
I mean, it's not hot. Looking at him is not hot. I'm not turned on by
Yeah, you're not
child.
Like, oh, your curly hairs remind me of the curly tail of the sperms that shot out of my weenus.
I hope their tails are not that curly. Like, sperms should have pretty straight tails.
No, but they use the tail to, like, go real fast.
They go.
Yeah, like,
they
go, like a propeller.
Yeah, Dan, like what Dan did.
They're like little piggies.
Yeah.
Anyway, the second twist numero dos.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the reason that Edward Norton keeps striking out when he's trying to hit on KK is the actors have helped everyone with their problems. The play they were rehearsing has been called off. Will Smith and his now reunited wife are walking through Central Park smiling. They're reunited and it feels so good. Above them on a bridge, one of the many beautiful bridges that Olmsted and Vaux put into Central Park.
Yep. Okay.
The first park they ever designed, and yet it's one of the greatest in the world. It's amazing. I guess it all goes down to their original theories of park design, which were not kind of the English box garden, very man-made and artificially manicured.
It's crazy.
But instead, the idea of a more
natural
setting.
This is the art of suspense.
Yeah.
That Olmsted believed that you always wanted to be able to turn a corner and see a new vantage.
Creating a desire to hear the end of this sentence.
And so they're on a bridge watching down to them. Camera cuts over to Will Smith and his wife, cuts back.
Cat's eyes.
Bam, 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 bam. No, it turns out, and they've disappeared. And you're like, wait, what? Was that? Well, hold on. Was that really love, time, and death that took time out of their busy schedules of running of the universe to help the ad agency? help their grieving friend to get back together with his wife. And you're left to wonder, don't they have better things to do?
Yeah. I always see a movie like this and I'm just like...
You always see a movie like this? You should watch some other better movies.
I always see a movie like this and I'm like...
Always? Like, go watch like the movie, like a silly always. Movie. Yeah.
Why don't these magical figures ever intervene in my life? Like, apparently that's what they do. They just
It's a movie.
Oh, okay.
The same reason that you've never met Freddy in your dreams.
And like, you don't turn on your fucking radio and you're like, a person from a frequency or destiny or some shit.
The same reason that you should stop being scared that you're going to be invited to the opening of a dino park and the dinos are going to get loose.
Oh, yeah. No, but it seems like if...
By the way, you would totally get killed if you got invited to Jurassic Park. No offense, dude, but you're not like a little kid or the hero.
You're certainly not knowledgeable about dinosaurs to the extent that, say, Dr. Alan Grant is.
Mm-hmm. And I don't have the cool factor of a
Goldblum type. Yeah. I'd be more of like a Newman type, where I'd be like, why is this dinosaur spitting acid in my eyes?
I like to believe I'm the guy who says, hold on to your butts before a dinosaur kills me.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert for Jurassic Park, Samuel L. Jackson doesn't make it through the movie.
No.
He gets turned into one of the fakest, fake ripped off arms you've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah.
So Dan, you wonder, these forces never intervene in your life.
Well,
maybe you're not rich enough.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of movies where destiny or an angel intervenes, it's to show a rich person that they should like be with their family more. And poor people don't tend to get that much help from angels in the movies or from abstract concepts.
And we're talking about people who have no, the only element of reality interceding in these people's lives is, I guess, the mortality of their children and person.
Which
in
is
the case
a pretty
of,
big
which
thing.
Is terrifying. But, like, there's other than that, they're just, like, you know, wealthy Manhattan people.
Yeah. I just figure that if, like...
WMPs.
Yeah.
If magical, like, cosmic entities are going to personally interfere, like, they're going to intervene in people's lives, then maybe we would, I don't know, hear about this more often? If they've got the time to go around doing this?
Dan, this brings me back to something I've talked about on the podcast that I call the Teen Wolf hypothesis.
Right.
Okay. Which is that, or the Teen Wolf paradox, which is that, that's better, not
possible. Your essay you sent into Weird Science magazine.
Yeah, the Journal of Weird Science, not published.
Yeah.
In a world in which a werewolf is playing basketball for a high school basketball team, this news would make it into papers beyond the local school paper.
Yeah,
that an openly werewolf basketball player, let's disregard the fact that this team got turned around from being one of the worst to one of the best because of one star player. That would attract scouts.
You think that would, yeah, that would attract
least.
National attention.
Like LeBron was well known in high school, you know. He was already being scouted.
Wow, have you been spending time with David lately? What's going on?
but tie on top of that the fact that he is a werewolf. Oh, not just proving, one, that werewolves are real, which is something that we've all wondered for years. I mean, we've all agreed to the social fiction that there are no werewolves just to keep society moving. But yeah, so this opens up two doors down, you might say. Mm-hmm. One, if werewolves are real, what about vampires? What about mummies? What about Gilman? What about ghosts? What about Frankenstein monsters? Mm-hmm. What about Dybbuk's?
Ghoulies?
Banshees? Ghoulies? Critters? Munchies? Gremlins? And I can't believe gremlins were the last of that list after munchies. Number two. Something with the amazing morphology that it can grow hair overnight and then I guess shed that hair and teeth will lengthen and then go back. Biologically, we don't have an explanation for that. DNA doesn't really cover it. So this werewolf would be the biggest story. Sorry, Trump being an agent of Russia. You're going on second page because werewolves are real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
So anyway, you make a good point, Dan. We would have heard about this at some point.
So is it like when we were watching Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon together and you're like, why am I never flying around like that? And fallen in love.
I mean, you never answered that question for me, Stuart.
I know. I was totally enraptured by the magic of the movie.
How come I never get trapped in a Groundhog Day?
Yeah.
I would love to relive the same day over and over again until I get it right.
I have tickets, by the way, for the Broadway production of Groundhog Day. I got them free.
Oh, got them free. Really?
Yeah. I've got press tickets.
Whoa.
So next time I'll report back on that.
Please do.
It'll be Flophouse in theaters.
You're writing up the review for Variety or something?
Yeah.
So here's the thing about this movie. It was trying for very meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
It fails to that. It's instead very treacly. And I have a question, but Stuart, you said it looked like you want to say something.
Yeah, I mean, I think the elephant in the room tonight, guys,
mm-hmm.
is a certain little cat burglar.
Yeah.
By the name of 7 Pounds.
So he's a cat burglar?
Right? I thought that was his...
I guess he's a thief in general.
I mean, when Batman drops him off at Arkham Asylum and he fills out the paperwork.
He certainly isn't. The only options they give you on the form are cat burglar, murderous clown, and...
that covers Zazz.
And murderers. That's Zazz is not really a clown.
I mean, he's covered in like scars, right? That's
pretty funny. Okay, I'll give you that. It's either cat burglar, murderous clown, or
alligator man.
Yeah, or alligator man, which is just the one dude. Killer.
I mean,
croc.
Clayface can be an alligator man.
Yeah, he could change into an alligator. True, and Penguin has a sharp nose. He's kind of an alligator.
Yeah, I mean, let's just say animal man.
Who?
Just say animal man, not animal man.
Oh, okay. You can't say animal man, Buddy Baker, who's a hero. Why is he in Arkham? But animal man. Yeah, animal people. Manimals.
Manimals.
So you can either be a cat burglar, a psychotic murderous clown, or a manimal.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we got to make more bubbles on this form to fill out. Well, we'll add other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's how you can fit poison ivy on there.
Yeah,
that's where Condiment King goes or whatever.
Condiment King?
Yeah.
I mean, there's Clock King.
No, there's also a condiment guy.
There's no way.
Yeah.
Look, and he's the king?
Look, I want listeners to prove me wrong on this. I don't remember a condiment-themed Batman villain.
What is Relish? Relish is on there.
Well, yeah, he relishes crime.
He's got to catch up to the other villains.
He's using mustard gas.
I think it was one of those joke villains that was like a one-shot thing. I've read about him, though.
Okay. I'm not familiar with him. I mean, Batman has a villain who's literally a ventriloquist dummy with a tiny gun. So maybe he has a condiment-themed villain.
A character that Bruce Timm made terrifying.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so, but what I'm trying to say is that the previous Will Smith movie, 7 Pounds, had a similar, like, overly saccharine, overly, like, sentimental tone.
Yeah, this was going to be the most important movie you ever saw.
What's going on with our boy Will Smith? Why is Will Smith doing this, guys?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Mr. Smith
go to Washington.
Yeah, in a number of movies, After Earth, 7 Pounds, something else.
Yeah, name another.
Incredible Mr. Lippitt.
I think he's just
smothered his natural charm recently.
It feels like the sort of movie that would be made by somebody who is like kind of out of touch with
Winter's Tale.
Oh, he was actually really good in
that. As the devil in Winter's Tale. He was the best thing in it.
But like, it feels like the kind of movie made by somebody who has lost touch with what people are actually like.
Yeah, there's a sense in it of. Yeah, famous people trying to connect to emotions that they like everyday things that they're not really are not necessarily a part of how they exist anymore.
Yeah.
And Will Smith exists in a very strange plane right now where he seems to think and comprehend the universe in a different way than most people.
Now, I was reading trivia, not to bring the podcast about a
not
movie
to
about...
Brag.
Not to brag.
But I could read.
I was reading trivia on the Internet Movie Database, and it was talking about how Will Smith was while he was making this movie, he was
dealing
also
drugs.
Dealing with the loss of his father, which I guess on some level I understand the idea of using as an artist. He's using this as a way to like... work through his personal shit, and I guess that makes sense. I just wish the movie was better.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't... Well, we can go into final judgments, and
I had one thing I wanted to say. Okay. Well, I can say it as part of my final judgment, actually. So go ahead. Final judgments.
Is this a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie you actually liked I'm going to say it's a bad, bad movie. It's placed in a real world context, but the contrivances of it are so crazy that it only would have worked if you had created a heightened reality. And I don't feel like what I was going to say is like, I don't feel like it's the actor's fault for what's going on. I think by and large, they're all doing the best they can with what they're given. Mm-hmm. It's just a crazy fucking script that is maudlin and filled with stupid tricks.
It's not odd enough to work as kids. Like,
I know.
And this movie's not for kids. That's the thing.
No, true.
It's not odd enough for it to be like, I feel like had this been a French movie, the like exoticism of like French cinema
if
might
what's
have
his name who did Amelie did this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it was, I could see if this was in French, Spanish or Italian.
Yeah,
it I would see it working better, or
like
Japanese.
The otherness of it would elevate it to a different. Like it would feel divorced enough from our like everyday reality for it to seem like a bigger like a grand story.
There are lines
I mean?
Of dialogue in this that if they I was reading them in a subtitle, I think would affect me more than hearing them spoken in English because mm-hmm. I'd be like, people don't talk that way. Come on, that doesn't make any sense. That if I was reading them in a subtitle, I'd be like, I don't know, maybe, I don't know. Here's, sure. I would say this is a bad, bad movie. You know, trying its darndest. Here's my question. Has there ever been a good movie with beauty in the title?
I mean, American Beauty was, didn't it win the Best Picture?
What, come on. What does that mean?
Okay, you're right.
American Beauty, it's not the worst movie in the world.
That's true.
I feel like that's a movie people have tarred more than they need to.
It is certain people audiences have soured on it.
Yes, it's one of many movies that won Best Picture and then audiences disparaged it immediately.
Mm-hmm. Was Stealing Beauty any good, or was it just that there were naked
There's nudity
people
in it? to be honest, haven't tried to watch it since I was 16 and was not interested in anything other than the.
I mean, number
scenes.
One at the box office
no,
right
Beauty
now is
Beast.
Beauty and the Beast. Beauty
okay,
the
Beast. There you go, Beauty and the Beast. I haven't seen the current version, but surely the Disney version
and
the
French,
the Cocteau version is wonderful.
The current movie, which famously a moviegoer at the Alamo Drafthouse in New York City asked another moviegoer, what's his dick like?
Famously.
There was an article in the New Yorker talking about it, and I guess that like a screenshot of that New Yorker article was going around where like a woman was like, what's his dick like?
And was were they asking Belle? Like, how would anyone know?
I mean, I don't know. I think at that point it's...
You got on that. What was that like?
It's. I mean, I think at that point it's like a brainstorming sesh.
And she goes home and she just like puts a dildo on
just,
a rug to try to figure out what the sensation was
is
like.
Is it barb?
Well, I mean, I would hope not.
Yeah.
I would hope not, too. I think we can all hope that. Okay, so you answer my question, Beauty and the Beast.
All right.
It was I was having trouble thinking of a movie with Beauty in the title that was not a movie I did not want to watch.
Yeah.
Oh, Beautician and the Beast doesn't actually have beauty in it.
So, no sponsors this week, but
we are unpopular.
No, that's because Max Fun Drive just ended, and we wanted to thank everyone who donated to Max Fun Drive this year.
Yeah, our show, like all the shows on the Maximum Fun Network, are almost exclusively listener supported, like predominantly listener supported.
Though we have sponsors, they are a pittance compared to what we get from our listeners, which is what keeps us going.
Keeps
my boy in Cheerios and underpants.
and Captain Underpants books.
And keeps us
he is
in,
not reading those, thank you.
And keeps us financially, emotionally supported.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that in
keeps
many,
our genitals supported through Mack Weldon underwear.
Yep.
In many ways, I mean that's a sponsor thing, but
my hands because I hold up Dan's wiener and testes.
All right. Well, I was going to say something sincere, but now I feel like I can't. In many ways, just as even though the money is often feels necessary to us and is a wonderful supplement to our day to day incomes and makes it a little easier for us to live and do the podcast, It is in a larger sense for me at least. Seeing that money coming in from the pledge drive is such an emotional support because it shows us how much you, the listeners, care about what we're doing and want to support it and want to hear more about it and don't take it for granted. And that really means a lot to us. And so don't think we take you for granted in making those pledges. It really means a lot to us and we're thankful for it.
And it was a very fun time. Obviously, I had a lot of fun last night based on my...
Why are you winking at me right now,
...demeanor
dude?
This morning.
Did you guys sleep together last night?
Well, I think it was on the table.
Together is a strong word. I don't know what I mean by that.
So you both slept in separate places?
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
that's a less strong
word. So that's every night.
Dan stormed off, and then me and Mark Gagliardi from We Got This just kept drinking and bullshitting about Dan leaving early. Mm-hmm. Classic bit. So, Dan, did you have something nice to say, or do we just want to razz on you for leaving early?
Yeah. I wasn't even there, and I'm still going to razz on Dan for leaving early.
Elliot stayed up till 4 a.m, and he wasn't even at the party. He just wanted to stay up to show he could do it because he's a big boy.
Yeah, who's going to tell me no? Nobody, that's who.
I can eat cereal whenever I want.
I'm going to have pizza for breakfast.
Get out of here.
And I'm going to have candy pizza
with
for dinner.
Eggs on it?
I didn't say that. Dan, explain yourself.
No, I agree with everything that was said before. It's a great support. We get a lot of support in the way of messages from listeners, which are also well appreciated, telling us how much they love the show, how much it means to them, how it's helped them through a hard time.
But money, too.
But money
Don't
is
forget the money.
Money makes the world go round. So thank you for that.
And the money goes also toward the Maximum Fun Network.
The money goes to the network.
And being part of the Maximum Fun Network for us has been a wonderful experience. It's been a great community for us to be a part of, and it feels like we reached another level of podcasting, I don't know, confidence and quality, being
sure.
With considering the other
this
shows.
This episode notwithstanding.
Not as so much this one, but considering the shows that we're brethren to now.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much for pledging. If you didn't pledge this year, then next year is coming around.
And by the time you're listening to this, there's a chance that my fate will be sealed. That I will be boxed up and sent off to the Grand Canyon to ride a burro out into the middle of nowhere to what I have heard is one of the most beautiful places in the United States to record a special podcast.
And one last note on this. When this gets released, the Max Fun Drive will be officially over, but it'll be over by a day. I'm pretty sure that if you decided to get in,
some stragglers might get in
a last donation or two, you probably will be counted as part of the Max Fun Drive, I would imagine.
So try it.
Yeah. Try it as an experiment.
Yeah.
See what happens.
So if we've finished thanking the listeners and asking them to continue donating, I have a correction I'd like to make.
All right.
And I'd like to – can we go to the back of the beginning of the episode and apologize that we made jokes about a movie that the main point is a guy getting over the loss of a child?
I mean, it's not –
I feel like we should throw that out up front.
It didn't really happen. It's a movie.
I guess that's right.
I mean, speaking as a father, which I can do because I have a child,
And
it's just so wonderful. It's just such a wonderful thing.
You seem really fulfilled.
I mean,
for having sex that one time.
That's all I needed. It is the thing I fear the most. And it is something that it's one of those things where it's such a horrifying thought that you find your mind drawn to it in the way that something really terrible that you don't want to think about attracts your thinking. And then you worry that by thinking about it, you're making it more likely to happen. And even having that be a fear I live with every day watching this movie, I was still like, come on, movie.
And like, I'm not going to name specific movies, but a couple of the Academy Award nominees for Best Picture this year that I thought were pretty good were movies that dealt with the loss of a child on various stages. And it only sets this movie in stark relief about how bad it is.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to watch a movie about loss of a child, this is not the one to do. There's a couple of movies from this year, or just go watch The Sweet Hereafter. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's a movie that kind of gets at similar things in a way, in a much deeper way. But, okay, I should save that for recommendations. I want to make a correction for something I said a couple episodes ago.
Uh-huh.
I referred to an unpublished Marvel story of mine called Old Man Spider-Ham. And I erroneously misremembered the name of the artist who drew the book. It was not Scotty Young, as I said. It was Eric Canete, who was drawing in a very Scotty Young style.
Okay. Because when you said Scotty Young, my eyeballs popped out of my head and I had to stuff them back into my head.
But no, if Scotty Young had drawn it, they probably would have published it because he's
what's the name of the artist again?
Eric Canete, who's also a really good artist. Cool. He's really great, and he has a couple books out now.
Great.
And maybe someday Marvel will see fit to print up that story now that Spider-Ham is more relevant than ever.
Yeah. Out on the heels of Deadpool 2 going to production.
I would love it if they worked it out somehow for Spider-Ham to appear in Deadpool 2. That would be amazing.
Who would do the voice of Spider-Ham? Because, of course, he's a CGI character.
Yeah. Oh, no. You can't just hire an actual pig man to do it.
No. They're uncommon.
They're difficult to find.
And to find one that also has the acting chops, unlikely.
Yes.
So who's going to do the voice of Spider-Ham, Dan?
The late Gary Marshall.
They're
going to do it Peter Cushing style.
Okay. I mean, it's already a CGI character. You don't need to do a recreation of Gary Marshall for a character that is a pig man, which Gary Marshall was not one of. It leads me to believe you were not listening to what we were saying. That's a good question, because it should not be too cartoony a voice. It's not like it's not a Rocket Raccoon type character, because he's Peter Porker. He's a mild-mannered pig who becomes Spider-Ham.
Exactly.
But it should be a little cartoony.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to say... I don't know.
Now, when you guys were watching Collateral Beauty tonight and they kept calling Will Smith's character Howard, were you ever thinking, is he Howard the Duck?
I was not thinking that.
And Dan's checking the Flophouse Recommends wiki, so he'll answer later.
So who would do the voice of Spider-Ham? I'm going to say grown-up Jonathan Lipnicki.
Wow. I mean, you know, I think he's ready to get back in the spotlight.
He's super buff these days, and I don't know what he sounds like, so it's a wild card.
Oh, wow. I like it. Casting unheard.
Let's move on to letters from listeners.
Okay.
Let's move on to letters. L-E-T. Let's L-E-T. Letters. They're two words that both have L-E-T in them. And what does that stand for? L. Strength of a lion. E. Memory of an elephant. T. Strength of a termite. Proportionately stronger than a lion. Combine those two strengths and it's pretty strong. An elephant's memory, I've heard, is very strong. Let's do the other letters. T. Greatness of a tiger, Tony specifically. E. Richness of an emir. Rules a whole country, you see. And R stands, of course, for Roy Rogers. Roy Rogers. Fried chicken chain. Roast beef sandwiches, hard to find unless you're on a highway in New Jersey. Letters. The S stands for you. Stuart.
Can I lick your stamp?
So this one is from Graham, last name withheld.
Who Graham writes, Norton.
Graham Cracker.
Can you think of any films where the version you watched made a substantial difference to how much you enjoyed it? Speaking from my own experience and opinions, I could not understand the universal popularity of Blade Runner from the earlier cuts, which I felt lacked coherency. But I enjoyed the final cut far more, despite being almost the same film. Having grown up on the longer T-1000 edition of Terminator 2, made watching the theatrical version somewhat jarring, as scenes I thought were integral to the plot were absent altogether. The critically maligned Daredevil film is actually somewhat watchable in its R-rated form. And, most obscurely, the original Japanese version of The Adventures of Milo and Otis only shares about 60% of its footage with the later English version.
They show a lot more of the stunt dogs being killed.
If you watch it, you'll see why 40% was changed for Western audiences.
It's
all tea ceremony.
So what movies?
It's mostly them bowing to each other in ever more elaborate ways to show respect.
You must not receive a gift three times in a row, Otis, before eventually accepting it.
So what movies would you recommend one version
Milo
of?
Milo has to make a pilgrimage to a specific shrine. What
movies would you recommend one version of, but not the other? And for Stuart, what was it like rewatching Castle Freak and not seeing a scene you remembered so vividly? Mm-hmm. Love your show. Keep on flopping.
Does the imaginary version count as a version of that movie?
First off, I don't know. I mean, the version I saw must have been a little different than the version I saw originally. But I want to go back to Blade Runner. I'm going to tell you right now.
I would like to talk about that too.
Right now, I'm going to tell you why the original version was popular, and also your later version is popular, because people don't give a shit about the narrative coherence of a movie that I don't actually think is very coherent at all. I don't think it's a particularly great movie. The reason why people like it, and the reason why I will still say it's all right, is because it's a beautiful movie.
It looks great.
It's a beautiful movie that has a great score. Like,
here's what I'm going to say, and this is going to be controversial. Blade Runner is...
You're going to ruffle a few feathers.
I'm going to ruffle a lot of feathers. Get your chickens out of the room unless you want their feathers ruffled the fuck up.
Okay.
Chicken?
Okay, they're out of here.
I'll give you time
to
move the chickens out. Okay. Blade Runner is the hunger of science fiction movies. It is a
lesbian scene.
No, it's a stylistic feast where the plot does not really make any sense. And that is why I like the original theatrical cut with the voiceover on it more than the director's cut.
Because
at least you have Harrison Ford telling you what the hell is going on in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's leaden and it's just describing things. Without that, I grew up with only the director's cut of the movie, and it was a long time before I saw the theatrical cut, and I read all the stuff about how terrible the theatrical cut was, how bad the voiceover was. When I finally saw it, I was like, oh, I know what's happening from scene to scene in this movie now. Now I know why the studio put this voiceover on it, but it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
A movie, I'll say the versions are very different.
Uh-huh.
Growing up with Godzilla, King of the Monsters, and then finally as an adult, when it was released in theaters briefly again, the original Gojira, which is a very different movie. One is a monster movie, and the other is about the horror of a city under massive attack by a force it can't stop. And losing Raymond Burr, just kind of looking out of windows and kind of like sleepily talking about what he was seeing, really improved the movie. It's a very different movie.
I remember...
Which is not to say that I didn't grow up loving Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
No one would ever accuse you of that, Elliot.
Okay, good. Thank you.
The first time I saw Aliens, and I think this is the version that I taped off of television and had for many years, it was the director's
cut.
A VHS
cut. That said sports on it.
Why are you hiding Aliens?
It was the director's cut that included a lot of scenes.
The stuff about her daughter?
Yeah, well, the scenes that it had that... All right, first it had a scene that's unnecessary, which was
the dance party at the end.
You see the colonists on, like, what is it, LU-486 or something like that?
No, LU-486.
You see the columnists. You see Hedda Hopper and Luella Parsons.
Trying to get an interview with this xenomorph. Rumors going around that this xenomorph might be gay. Let's blow the lid off this thing. The studios are trying to cover it up.
The colonists were, you see them.
Mr. and Mrs. America and all the spaceships at sea.
Getting attacked, and we don't need to see that. It's good. It's better not to know what happened to the colonists, even though you know what happened to the colonists.
The movie's called Aliens.
But it's it's better not
it's
to
not
see that.
Turn out
you're like, oh, do they just give up on their dreams of founding a new colony?
I guess it was climate change.
It's better for the movie not to start that way, though. You want to wait on the mystery of what
occurred. To edge you a little bit.
Yeah. But there are two scenes that I think make the movie a lot better. And one is the one where Ripley sees that her daughter has died during the time that she was in hypersleep, which adds, you know, a little backstory, emotional backstory to why she's so attached to Newt. And two, there's
because Newt's a precocious, cool old kid.
Yeah.
Who says like
they mostly come out of
She's
night,
like an audience
mostly.
Surrogate.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
Affirmative. And there's
yeah,
the
Bug Hunt man game over. Yeah.
I'm in the pipe 5x5.
There's a scene where they set up automated guns to the aliens are coming down the corridors at them. And they set up these automated guns that are slowly going down. You see the countdown of their ammunition slowly going out, and you don't know what's going to happen. And I won't spoil it for people who haven't seen Aliens, but it's a very tense scene, and it's one that I miss very much when I see the theatrical version.
Yeah, I mean, Aliens is a great movie.
Yeah.
It is.
So, let's see. The extended versions of Lord of the Rings, obviously, I prefer the extended versions. I think the extended version of Return of the King, and maybe I feel like that's the only one where it's a toss-up between the theatrical or the extended version. But the extended version of Fellowship of the Ring and Two Towers, I think, are essential. That's the preferred version. I would say the TV Comedy Central edit of Coming to America is hilarious, if only for all the swapping of fuck you to forget you. That's hilarious.
That's I was going to say about the version of Ferris Bueller's Day Off that we had on tape as a kid was off TV. And there was a few moments of that where it's like, I'm not saying Cameron is uptight, but if you took a piece of coal and shoved it in his fist, in 2 weeks you'd have a diamond. And of course, it was a long time before I learned that the line was up his ass. And I was always like, wow, come when he says in his fist, his voice sounds totally different. Like he's in a different room even.
I remember in college, a buddy of mine had a VHS tape of the Peter Jackson movie Bad Taste. And he's like, oh, you got to watch this. It's from the guy who made Dead Alive. And I had seen Dead Alive previously, but I had seen the R-rated version.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
And first off, it's like fucking like 64 minutes long. It's super short. And they just edited all the awesome gore out. And I'm like, this movie is dog shit. So that didn't. And then I ended up having to track down and finding the unrated version, which is amazing. And yeah, it's super great. So, and it is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, definitely only see the unrated version of Dead Alive. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Should I move on?
Sure.
This is from, let me look, Joseph Last Name Withheld.
Gordon Levitt.
Who says, wow.
Dear Messrs. House Duflop, your biggest gay-assed fan again. Hey, recently I noticed... recently I noticed Elliot using yet again a descriptive term that subjectively, personally, in my head is particularly grating. He described a character's development in the film as their journey. He's also used this odd therapeutic epithet to describe plot as well. Now, I find Elliot as cute and cuddly and as wonderful as I find Dan sturdy and as well extant or as hot as Stuella DeVille. But this word is loathsomely overused in general, but particularly as applied to movies.
I only prefer it to be applied to reality shows.
This made me realize that there are many such filler words regularly used by critics and reviewers.
I would call journey to be a totally apt word. Continue.
Some good, some not so good, which I find corny in the sense of being lame. Some of these include visceral, balletic, tactile, and the dread academicized, filmic. Are there
balletic is definitely when it's referring to violence, or something. Because yeah. I'm always like, have these guys seen a ballet? But they all they're really,
I saw Equilibrium, dude. That's a ballet, right?
Because all they're really saying is that this violence was well choreographed, but it's not really balletic.
I saw that scene in Boondock Saints where Willem Dafoe is flipping out.
Yeah.
Oh, that movie sucks.
End it, and then I've got an answer for
you. Are there any of these grayish shorthand words that you dislike? The male gaze? Fetishization? I suspect Stuella has a high disdain for Hustler's old Peter meter. Joseph last name withheld. That was kind of thrown in there.
Overused a bit.
I mean, it's really only used by the one guy, but
I do like anytime a movie has any element of synthesizer in the score and or neon in the movie, it's going to get lurid in the review somewhere.
If there's anything through Venetian blinds, then yeah.
yeah.
Here are the words that in reviews, the term American classic bothers me. Because just called a classic, you're then saying that this movie says something uniquely true about America, which is rarely the case. I remember in the ads for Fight Club, they were always quoting Peter Travers as calling it an American classic, and that really bothered me. In ads for movies, visionary. We've talked about this, of course. Mm-hmm. Anyone who becomes a visionary, I guess, because they can see. And this is something I was complaining about on the Twitter not too long ago. Woefully miscast. I've never seen a movie where someone has – I've seen movies where people are miscast. Never so miscast that I have felt woe, which is literally like Edgar Allan Poe level melancholy and sadness.
You haven't been watching a movie and you're like, oh no, a pox upon my house for this casting.
George Clooney shouldn't be playing Batman. Oh God, there is no God.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll just live in a decaying manor.
Yeah.
And worry that my sister was buried alive.
I don't know that I have any of these, honestly. Like, there are ones that are specific to, like, certain reviewers. Like,
anything Matt Singer says, I'm like, fuck that.
That
go back
asshole.
Go back to eating branded fast food menus.
He's eating the menus?
I mean, if it gets close enough to his King Kong burger, it'll get eaten.
That's
So, Dan, what are some words you don't like?
Well, I was saying that.
Trust,
I don't,
honesty.
Yeah. Forthrightness.
Affection.
Love. Time. Death.
And everything in between. If this movie had been made in the 90s,
yeah,
and it was an indie film, it would have been called Love, Time, Death, and Everything in Between. Or like Love, Time, Death, and Some Other Great Flavors. Or some shitty, like, winky title like that. Mm-hmm. Everything in the 90s had to have shitty, winky titles.
Yeah. Love, Time, Death, and a Duffel Bag.
Yeah, exactly. Love, Time, Death, and other fun things to do.
And other catastrophes.
I'd be in Blockbuster Video, and I'd be like, this looks good. Mom, can I rent this?
I'll try it.
I didn't have anything good to say about this, so we should just move on.
Cool, let's just move on.
Okay, let's get moving on.
I think we're only going to do three letters this night, so this will be our last one.
Okay, the third act.
The denouement.
This one.
That's French for last letter.
This one is from Riley, middle name withheld, Quinn,
mm-hmm.
who writes, "Hey, Flop Kings. When I was 80% asleep, I muttered something to my girlfriend and asked her to take it down so I could send it in to you guys as a letter."
How lazy. Write it yourself.
He's dating her from the movie Her.
Oh, okay.
Here follows her note. Either help me make sense of it, or let me resign myself to worshiping
Nyarlathotep,
the crawling chaos.
Right.
Is it creeping chaos or crawling chaos?
Crawling chaos.
Crawling chaos.
So,
although I don't know a way to worship him, he's really more of a servant of the elder gods.
She sent he said girlfriend, right?
Or
whoa,
she?
Whoa, Dan!
Could be a lesbian.
Don't make that assumption. Just say they.
All right,
that's acceptable now.
Riley is just
Ace of Spies.
What did Riley say?
Okay.
What did Riley say?
Riley sent a nice screenshot of it.
Which shouldn't make it harder to read.
I don't know why you're showing it to Elliot. Like, look at this stuff.
Exhibit A. The printed out letter.
I got proof.
I'll enter this into evidence as Exhibit A.
Riley writes.
Just tell us.
Oh, my God.
God.
Sound it out phonetically if you have to.
Flophouse letter.
If you had said Riley tells us one more time, I think we would have left. KK, I'll come with you. KK, yeah, I'll come with you.
Flophouse letter - Houses of Parliament - Commons and Lords - in a slobs v. snobs film with a cool teen made PM. Sewell Convention. Speakers Dias Skateboard Tricks. Challenge the Flop Guys to come up with a name.
I think it's the word Dias.
Yeah, like Rock Me, I'm a Dias.
No. and so continue. Riley says.
Challenge the Flop Guys to come up with a name. That was it.
Oh, so it's a slobs versus snobs comedy where I guess the House of Commons and the House of Lords are in a fight.
With a cool teen made PM, yeah. Apparently.
Makes sense. Okay, and there's a skateboard trick.
Speakers Dias Skateboard Tricks.
Okay.
Sewell Convention. Is that Rufus Sewell?
He's got to be the bad guy.
I mean, you sure maybe it's a misspelling of Zool Convention and there's a Ghostbusters angle to it?
Or are you
that
saying
would be
that
a hell of a misspelling?
they sound
alike, but they're not spelled alike.
I've had
at all.
Enough times when I've typed a word into my phone and it's thought it was some other cockamamie word I didn't want.
Like cockamamie.
Yeah. Type in cockamamie and it thinks I want Kaka Mamie Eisenhower. This is not my Mamie Eisenhower erotic fan fiction.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure to come up with a good name on the spot, but that's pressure that we can handle because we're professionals.
I think I'd call it London Thrashing.
Oh, cool.
To get the skateboard angle in there.
I would say Houses and Lords and Everything Else.
And Dan, what would you go with? Keep in mind, I'm now taking Bringing Down the Houses off the table.
Extra anarchy in the UK.
Okay, interesting. Oh, more than nice. The regular size.
Yeah.
When you need a little bit more anarchy, that's the one you get from behind the counter.
Yeah.
Extra strength anarchy in the UK.
Okay, so we did like a B-plus job on this assignment.
Generous.
I'm giving us an A for trying.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, if you have any notes that you've written yourself or had dictated late at night and don't understand anymore, please send them to us.
Send it to us. We'll come up with a title for them, I guess.
Now we move on to our final segment of the evening, or whenever you're listening to this podcast, and that is recommendations. Movies that we like. Instead of Collateral Beauty, which I keep wanting to call Collateral Damage because that's a phrase and Collateral Beauty is not.
Okay, Dan coming out strongly against the phrase Collateral Beauty.
All right.
I hope people are listening to this episode long into the future and realize that like far into the future where Collateral Beauty is like a thing that everybody says.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll seem totally, totally
divorced from.
Yeah, exactly. Like that G.I. Joe Retaliation episode where I was like, there's no way the American people would elect a man with silly hair like Jonathan Pryce. And then people keep tweeting me about it. And every time I'm like, oh, I feel bad about saying that thing. And I feel worse about the current state of our country.
I mean, yeah, it's like that is to say before it happened that America would never elect like a bad person president. Mm-hmm. I think is or supervillain. I think it's totally OK to be like, you know what? I was wrong. I'm not going to feel bad about assuming.
Like you guys are idiots because you didn't think the American people would hire elect Cobra Commander to be the commander in chief. I don't know.
Commander experience.
That's true.
That's very hard to get, too.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. That's why they wouldn't elect him, is because they're suspicious of somebody with previous experience in being a commander. Like, I mean, they want an outsider.
He's establishment. Let's just say Cobra Commander is establishment, and they want an outsider like Globulus.
Like Globulus.
Couldn't even say it with a straight face. President Globulus, which is kind of what we have. But anyway.
That's where I got that name.
So I was sitting here, you know, we've done.
What
this
do we do now, Dan?
For well, like
you said already, recommendations.
We've done this for nearly 10 years, this podcast.
When's our anniversary? When's our 10-year anniversary? Keep in mind, I wasn't here for the originals.
Well, me and Dan, our anniversary's in August. I don't know. When did we do I Know Who Killed Me? That was your first year.
That would have been, I don't know, that was episode 8, so.
I mean, we can check iTunes. I think it tells you when it came out.
So we'll have to figure out if we want to do a 10th anniversary. We'll just do both. 10th anniversary of the show and then a mini 10th anniversary for when the original Peaches came together.
Okay.
Ironically, not as the original members of the show.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Maybe people could write in.
Thanks for explaining the joke for me.
Could write in, explain it with suggestions about how to celebrate 10 years of the Flophouse, which seems crazy now that I've just said that.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
But I say that just to say that we've been doing recommendations that entire time. They were a fixture of the show from the very beginning, and I still forgot that I was supposed to come up with a movie until halfway through the podcast tonight.
I thought you were going to say that you had run out.
Oh, that's why you were so quiet, Dan. I thought it was because you were half asleep.
I thought you were going to say that you're like, we've gone through a lot of movies, so it's hard to think of another one, and I was going to make fun of you. Like, yeah, there's only been 240 movies in the history of filmmaking. But no, that makes sense. It's actually, I should make fun of you for forgetting the thing we do every episode for 10 years, but it just makes me worry about you a little bit. You didn't cough at all tonight, did you?
I have been coughing a little bit.
Uh-oh. Pregnant. One thing I will say is doing the recommendation section of the podcast, at this point, it genuinely puts pressure on me to watch movies that aren't just the movie we watch for the Flophouse.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, that's what I haven't seen a new movie since we were last together, certainly. So like part of me was just like, what if I just recommended a book? And then I'm like, no, that's cheating.
We will make fun of you forever.
But no.
Is it a book about movies at least?
No, it's not a book about movies, but it led me to a movie.
Not permissible.
It led me to a movie.
Okay.
Because I read The Yiddish Policeman's Union recently, okay, and I enjoyed it.
Are you going to recommend Orson Welles' Heart of Darkness, which is mentioned in the book? That movie does not exist.
No.
And it's the one thing I want to ask Michael Chabon. Anyone listening, if you have the chance to ask Michael Chabon a question, I want you to ask him for me. In the alternate universe where the Jews of Europe were resettled in Alaska, how did it also change whether Orson Welles made a movie of Heart of Darkness or
he,
not?
I mean, he follows Hodgman on Instagram, so there's a decent chance Hodgman could ask him.
John Hodgman,
yeah.
If you're listening.
He's or, not.
He's not. Well, somebody tell Hodgman this, because he's not speaking to me right now. That's not true. Maybe I'll ask him. But I've always been like, it's just an interesting kind of the other difference of this alternate universe, because he was going to make a movie of Heart of Darkness.
Yeah.
But it was going to be too expensive.
So, okay.
So you're reading Yiddish Policeman's Union.
No, I enjoyed it very much, but that led me to think
of Police Academy 4.
I should recommend a Michael Chabon movie, which is Wonder Boys.
Oh.
Wonder Boys is
about
a film
wonderful boys
that I enjoy very much. It was not particularly lauded at its time of release. I mean, it wasn't. I mean, the critics liked it okay, but. Critics liked it okay, but no one went and saw it. And that's because it's
the
like,
movie about a college professor and a creative writing student who are having issues that they help each other out with. That didn't was a huge hit. That didn't rock the box office for 19 mm-hmm. whenever.
It's sort of a melancholy comedy, but it's very funny in spite of having this kind of...
Also known as every comedy on cable or Amazon.
All right. Well, apparently Elliot's not a fan of Wonder Boys.
Oh, no, it's fine. Just this new wave of melancholy comedies. Sorry, I shouldn't interrupt so much.
No, I don't have a whole lot to say other than it's a movie about a... Michael Douglas plays a college professor who's been trying to write a book for years and years and years, and his protege in the movie... Fuck, who?
Tobey Maguire?
Tobey Maguire.
Peter Parker?
Yeah, I was like...
Seabiscuit?
He he's a very talented writer, and Michael Douglas realizes this. And Jesus, it's a complex plot, honestly, now that I'm thinking about it. It's almost like a screwball plot slowed down is what Roger Ebert said about it. And I think that's very accurate. So I'm not going to try and get into all of the ins and outs of it. It's just a beautifully shot film. There's just gorgeous stuff in it, and I forget which. I think it's in Pittsburgh that it's set, and they managed to make this like rundown factory town look magical. And again, it's got a great cast. It's got Frances McDormand in it too, and she's great along with Michael Douglas, probably putting in his best performance, I think. So I recommend Wonder Boys. If you like the works of Michael Chabon, you should watch this film, which captures it pretty well, even though in the book, the professor is decidedly Jewish and not Michael Douglas.
I mean, Michael Douglas is half Jewish.
Is he?
He's Kirk Douglas's son. Kirk Douglas is Jewish.
All right. Well, he doesn't.
He certainly doesn't come off as Jewish in anything he does.
Anyway.
What about Wall Street?
He might be Jewish. I don't know who his mother is.
Oh, my God. I just remembered the movie we watched tonight is like a sad version of The Game.
That's hilarious. Dan, I'm going to look up and see if Michael Douglas is Jewish.
So while Dan's while Elliot's doing that, I'm going to recommend a handful of movies, I guess. So
a whole handful.
So
no, yeah, only his father is Jewish. Kirk
Dan had mentioned an episode or two ago that he had seen Get Out, and I finally saw it, and I think it's great. You should totally go see it. It manages to be a successful horror movie, like a schlocky horror movie, but at the same time, I think the political message it's putting out there is well thought out and deepens the horror moviness of it. And it's a movie where as things are revealed, it actually becomes a more interesting movie as opposed to being demystified and less interesting, which is often the case with that kind of movie. Get Out, it's just a great, strong first feature for a director. So boo on Dan for not recommending it.
So you're saying Get Out and see Get Out.
Get Out and see Get Out. Before Dan can respond, I'm going to keep going. I'm also going to recommend... last time when we were doing the show, John Hodgman was playing me off the stage, and I didn't get to bring up the fact that the movie I was recommending, Manborg, which is great, has at the end a trailer for a fake movie called BioCop, which is amazing. And that's available on YouTube. So if you have any time at all, go onto YouTube and watch a 5-minute trailer for a movie that doesn't exist called BioCop. You'll feel better about yourself. Go do that. I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want to ruin it. So go see that. And then I'm going to recommend the movie I'm actually going to recommend. You know what? I'm just going to say Get Out is my recommendation. It's awesome.
Wow.
You should go see that. It's got a lot of great performances. Go
save
see
that other one for another time.
Yeah,
you're
going to
need it.
Let me just open up my little pouch and put it back in there.
Your movie pouch.
Mm-hmm.
And when you open it, it's Stuart like,
movie pouch.
Well, get back in there, gross movie.
What'd you say, Dan?
I know, that sounds like his Turner Classic Movies show. Stuart Wellington's movie pouch.
Wouldn't that be great if I was able to trump Elliot's bid to be a Turner Classic Movie host with Stuart's movie pouch?
Movie sack. I got a sack full of movies.
My request is very simple. Just put me on, like, do a little thing on Shudder where I introduce fucking movies. I'd gladly do that.
That'd be great. Anyone who's listening to this, if you work at Turner Classic Movies, you know who somebody who works at Turner Classic Movies. One of my career goals is to be a Turner Classic Movies movie host.
Uh-huh.
Hook me up with it. It's something that
I'm pretty sure
I can do. Thank you. That's very nice you say. And I would do it in a very respectable way. I'm not looking to slag any movies on there. I'd really like to do it. I'm more than willing to share an apartment with Faye Mankiewicz, if that's how it works. Because I assume he shared an apartment with Robert Osborne, and that's where they shoot all the intros, in that apartment.
I feel like I think I'm pretty likely to get offered that gig, Elliot. And, you know, I'm just up front. I'm going to say you'd be better at it than me. Like,
even
I'm really charming and I'm really funny and everything, but I think you'd be better at it than me. So just offer it to Elliot instead.
I mean, Stuart's more handsome than me, so they're probably going to give it to Stuart.
Yeah, that's true. I'm tall, too.
He's tall. Isn't that kind of like a bad boy image?
Uh-huh. And, you know, I can dance when I have to.
Usually doesn't enter into it, but maybe.
No, but if I had to...
If someone had to put a gun to your head?
Yeah. Like,
it's the only way to save a bus full of people that's falling off a cliff if you danced.
I'm going to give you a hypothetical. We're on a planet, and Ronan the Accuser pops out, and he's got one of them Infinity Stones, and you're like, dude, I dance and win the day.
Okay.
I'm kind of confused about how your dancing wins the day. Like, is it a dance contest?
You haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy? That's what basically happens.
I mean, what I remember from Guardians of the Galaxy is the unnecessary amount of swear words. Yeah. It was not necessary to call Ronan the Accuser a bitch.
You were really mad because Danielle had her hands over your ears, so you didn't have to hear those swears.
I was like, I want to hear the bad words. I am disappointed that Ronan the Accuser, who has become a kind of complex character in the comics, was made just the regular Marvel movie two-dimensional baddie.
I thought he was much more interesting than that, but that's my...
Mostly. I think Lee Pace did what he could with
it. I love the idea that movie, the most of it seems like a happy-go-lucky, goofy space movie, and then all the scenes on Ronan the Accuser's ship is like super like grim and gross. Like, it seems like it's part of a completely different movie, and I love that about it.
That's fair. Well, we'll see what happens with the second one, since I'm hoping... Well, we'll talk about it later. The storyline they're doing the second one is, I hope, one from the comics that I like. Anywho, I'm going to recommend a movie that I feel like was kind of trying to do the thing that this movie was trying to do and achieved it much more. And it's a movie from 1986 called Promise with James Garner and James Woods, which was technically a Hallmark Hall of Fame TV movie.
Wow.
But it's available on...
This is a real first for Elliot.
But it's available... I mean, I saw it on Turner Classic Movies. It's available, I think, on DVD. And it is about... James Garner is a man who is in middle age, but doesn't want to... He doesn't live like he's in middle age. He lives like a much younger man. And his brother, played by James Woods, is a paranoid schizophrenic. And their mother passes away, and he had promised his mother years ago, I'll take care of my brother if anything should happen to you. And he's finding it now very hard to live up to that promise in a way he didn't realize it would be, because he never really thought about it before. And for the most part, it's a pretty understated movie. There's, of course, a scene where James Woods flips out completely, which is a little over the top. But
does he stick anything in his fucking tummy?
No, he's not. He doesn't. He doesn't enter the new flesh. But it's a movie about two brothers who really have nothing in common and have trouble living with each other in a way that they can never really overcome. And the best that they can do is kind of come to an understanding about each other in a way that they love each other, but they can't fix each other. And I found that there was especially for a Hallmark TV movie. Oh, this was at the time when they were putting out really, really quality TV movies. That for that, it really got to that point in an honest way, in a way that something like Collateral Beauty did not do. And the score in it is done by David Shire, who did the score for my favorite movie, Taken Pelham 1-2-3, and it is light years different from the score for that movie.
For the score of Taken Pelham 1-2-3 or Collateral Beauty?
Taken Pelham 1-2-3.
Because Collateral Beauty sounds like it was scored by, like, Atticus Ross's nephew.
There's a surprise amount of beeps and boops in the soundtrack of it. Not in Collateral Beauty, I mean. So Promise, I would recommend as just a solidly made family drama type movie that I liked.
All right, okay, guys.
Bunch of recommendations.
Yep. That's an accurate summation of what just happened.
Now, what's the next thing we're going to do?
The next thing we do is we...
Do we do, prizes or...
No. I'm curious like about Stuart doing one of those famous dances of his.
I hit stop on the recorder, and we all go home to our snug little beds.
Uh-huh.
And we go shuffle off to dreamland.
What if I need to shuffle off to Buffalo?
You're free to do that.
What if I just want to dream about a buffalo?
The free country for now.
Too topical.
Yeah.
Okay, Air America.
I'm getting too saucy. We should probably sign off. For the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart, the Quaking Quaker Wellington. Not actually a Quaker.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. And friends, who are we really when we get down to it? There's really only three constants in life. Uh-huh. Love, death.
Just some bunch of meat and bones.
And time. We're just sacks of flesh with maybe a little bit of spark, and who knows who put it there. Can you put a name on it? Can you really put a name on the thing that makes us us?
Put a name on it.
I guess if I had to put a name on it, for me, I'd say Elliot Kalin. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Let's start this show.
Yeah.
Sure that we do.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's called a podcast.
We'll do the intro first, and then we'll do the second part second.
Okay.
Love it. So the second part is the show.
Yep.
So you decided
what part
show
are we doing
the
now?
Second part.
In 3, 2, 1. On this episode...
I don't know why you looked at me like I was about to unleash a jape on you.
3, 2, 1, they looked at you like, I did something bad. Like,
I'm a naughty little boy with my counting down.
Oh, can you believe me?
Numbers usually go the other way.
All right.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.